Oh, on any given day, the Navy Department is the equivalent of the largest two or three companies in the United States. With hundreds and or thousands of people and a network of installations and other assets worldwide, it's a real challenge to manage. Right now, that job falls to Admiral Jonathan Greenert, the Chief of Naval Operations. He's standing by with Emily at the Sea Air Space Conference in Maryland. Anchors away, Emily.
Yes, we're here.
We are
standing by. Oh, dear. Okay.
Okay, a little tech problem on this end, but we've got you loud and clear now.
Oh, well, and we appreciated the music, Tom. So, yeah, that's unfortunate.
That great chorus.
We were enjoying you. Yes.
We were in a submarine. We just surfaced. All's ready.
All right. That all was right. Loud enough to bring up anything from the deeps. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
We're going to start, and I'm sorry to have to pivot to something that is much sadder, but it is in the news with the Fort Hood shootings last week. And the Navy is remembering one of its own today. Petty Officer Second Class Mark Mayo, who was killed recently at Naval Station Norfolk. Does this bring up questions of security on installations and something that all will be looking at again, even after the Navy Yard tragedy launched that whole review, the Pentagon-wide review?
Well, when you say again, we are still looking at all of our bases. We're looking at clearances. We're looking at clearances for contractors. And we're looking for at internal and external security. So that's ongoing, Emily. But, yes, this we will look at what were the circumstances, how this individual got on the base. So we will get to the bottom of that, and we'll take appropriate action. And as it applies to the bottom line, if you will, the root causes involved in the Navy Yard, the Washington Navy Yard shooting, we'll take action.
And I know that there are a lot of things that the Navy is going to do following that Navy Yard shooting. What's the time frame for implementing all of them? When do you think that you'll be done, at least with those recommendations?
Well, many have been underway for months, especially when it comes to, as you said earlier, base security and the security of our people. So that we went into immediately. And
You did not wait for this investigation?
No, we didn't. We did a quick look, actually, and it took just a few weeks. Number one, what are our processes and procedures on our basis? Number two, are we following them? Three, what changes, based on that, do we need to put in place immediately? And then how do we know what we think we know, if you will? How are we executing? That's ongoing. And then, as I said before, the root causes on what is the philosophy of security, internal, external, and how do we look at who gets on the base? So, again, we are generally looking outward. We're looking for, some external security or threat, if you will. And that's the way it's been on all of our installations. Mm. Now we say, okay, maybe we need to look better internally for the insider threat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's turn now to the budget. You were on Capitol Hill, it seemed like, almost every day last week, giving talks on the budget and basically asking Congress for more money, right?
Yeah.
But given the budget constraints, what is your message going to be to the sailors who are coming here to the Sea Air Space Expo today?
The message is, number one, you are number one. We talk about hollowing out and all that stuff, but the bottom line is, if you have the right people and they are organized, trained, and equipped, and they are motivated, you've got the solid foundation. But on the other hand, if you don't, you can have all the technology in the world. It is our people that is our asymmetric advantage. Number two, we need a better partnership, a better interdependence with industry, both national and international. So we have a better international flair here, if you will, with industry. So we need to partner more with them. We need to talk to them more and say, hey, here are our needs. How do we work this in a declining budget to be most effective in the future? That's kind of the message I have. And lastly, we are so obsessed with these big platforms and big complicated platforms. I'm looking at payloads, too. Payloads to put on the platforms we already have. We build ships, they last for 30 years, carrier 50 years. We have to innovate and adjust in the future with our payloads.
All right, so let's unpack that a little bit. Joint partnerships you mentioned with industry,
Yeah. Also
with the other services.
Yes.
What exactly do you envision?
Well, here's what I envision. We do very well operating jointly. Okay, you take two things, if you will. You get soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, Coast Guardmen, and you give them a task. And they go out and operate very well jointly. I think we need to think much more jointly as these requirements emerge and we're saying, what are we going to build? does the, in my world, does the, air, you've heard of air sea battle, right? You know, that's really the a concept of operating actually more jointly with the Air Force, the Marines, and the Army in the case of getting joint assured access. And what that means is getting wherever you need to get around the world, undersea, on the sea, in the air. Maybe another service has a better program. Maybe they have a better idea. What are we doing to explore their research and development in addition to ours? So what I'm talking about, Emily, is we need to buy more jointly as opposed to just operate more jointly.
And with industry, you mentioned more of a global flair.
Yeah.
What haven't you seen that you want to see?
Well, there may be some weapons and some payloads, as I mentioned before. That's a radar, a sonar, you name it, that would go on a ship or an aircraft. Maybe they're built better or more effectively overseas, and they can partner with our national industry, military industry, or defense industry. I think we need to explore that and see what they have, because we're going to operate more, we call it coalition, if you will, or combined, I'm sorry, more combined in the future. We need to turn to our allies more and nurture that more, and we're doing that. So their systems and the need to interoperate more just scream to gathering together and talking more about what are you buying and how do I ensure in the future they're compatible.
Do you think the military has been too wary of doing that?
I think we have. It's a kind of a risk aversion. We can't be sure. How am I sure in the future that I turn to a given ally and say, okay, here we go, and they say, sorry, my politics preclude it. And you know, we depended on that. I think we can work around that. There are some things that everybody is, if you will, in on. Piracy, search and rescue, weapons of mass destruction, things like that. That transcends politics and everywhere around the world. In fact, the strange thing, Emily, the gift that piracy gave us is coalitions that we never thought we'd have before. All countries in the world.
So you say thank you to the pirates.
Well, I won't do that, but it's just a small gift they gave.
Easy. We're speaking with Admiral Jonathan Greenert, the Chief of Naval Operations. So on the Hill, you did get some pretty pointed questions about the littoral combat ship.
Right.
And I understand that you're now wanting to scale down the original order, if I have my numbers right, from 52 to 32. What's the future of it? Are you looking at alternatives altogether?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, what the Secretary of Defense told us was he never said, I don't want 52. What he said was, when you're completed with 32, build 32 is what he said. I want you to look at this last 20, and I want you to go back and verify and validate that what we're building is good enough and right for the last 20. Or, number two, show me another version of a littoral combat ship. Maybe that's different. Maybe it's more lethal, more survivable, has more stuff on it. So another, we call it a flight, and you may have heard of that. Or and he said, and, so that's two, and three, show me a different design. What would that cost? What would be on it? When could you get that? When would we be able to build that? I tell you what, they're building a whole new class of ship has taken us at least a decade. So the other thing the Secretary knows, and we all know, is we need what we call small surface combatants. That's what a littoral combat ship is. It's a small surface combatant. We have 26 today, and we do need 52. That's what your Navy needs to do the job it needs to do in the world.
And do you think those 52 can, in fact, be based on the littoral combat ship as it is today?
I think, yes, I think that the littoral combat ship, perhaps a different flight, can meet that. We have to prove that, and I think that's a fair request by our Secretary of Defense. He said, I see what you got with the 32. Before we go to these next 20, show me these three options, and then we will decide. He said, I'll decide this summer/fall when we submit our next budget.
And there is also a question now that I want to ask you about with regards to female integration. And here in the Navy, we're talking about mostly in submarines. But it's, again, a Pentagon-wide initiative to take more women to combat roles or into roles that have been denied to them. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little bit of an update on that?
Sure. Well, first, it is a little bit more than submarines. We just recently put, I think it was 16 is the number, females entered the training pipeline to go on our riverine squadrons. We will support the Marines to the, and we turn to them for female support in their combat elements, and also we're waiting for special forces to determine where they want to go. So that's two out there. To submarines, it is our intention to integrate enlisted women on our attack submarines in 2016. So I'm looking for the plan to do that, to integrate in 16 in 1 year. So we're doing, I guess you call it detailed planning from 14 into 15, and then we'll roll out that plan of 15. If it looks acceptable, the target is 16. You've got to make some technical changes to the submarine for privacy, and then you've got to decide, all right, how many do we need to build the baseline so that you have the proper leadership? If you just take a gaggle of females or a gaggle of anybody and you put them in to anything new and you don't have the hierarchy of leadership for mentorship to develop them, we found that's not a good formula. And we found that the hard way when we integrated women in aviation and when we integrated women in surface ships.
So put another way, you want women in the leadership roles, the mid-management roles, and those entry-level roles as
precisely.
Well, not just coming in at the entry level and having to work their way up.
So how do we do that? We've done that before, and we have to work that. So you're going to have to ask some folks to transfer over and integrate in, and we're working with that. So as you know, we have officers today on our SSBNs, on our ballistic missile submarines, large submarines with not nearly the privacy issues, and SSGNs, which are cruise missile submarines of the same size. That integration is going very well. They are motivated. The feedback they get is that, hey, we've been accepted. We like this, and they're doing very well.